Now we're holding on page 8 in Sanhedrin, about the middle of the page, the middle of Os Ches. And we're dealing with the matters of qualifications of Dayanim and about the responsibility of Dayanim and so forth. So the Gemara continues, Ki also Rav Dimi Omer. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said the following, Donash Rav Nachman Bar Koyin, that in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Nachman Bar Koyin had darshaned the following pasuk. My dichtiv, what does it mean in a pasuk? Melech b'mishpat yamid oretz, a king upholds the earth, upholds the land with judgment. The ish trumos yehersena, but a man of trumos, a man of gifts, will ruin it. Now the question is, why is a melech the opposite of ish trumos? So it means like this: im dayan domel melech. If the dayan is like a king in the sense she'in etzorach l'klum, that he doesn't need anything. He doesn't meaning, in other words, that he knows the dinim. He doesn't need. He's full of chochma, like a king is full of riches. So yamid oretz, then with his din, he upholds the land and he upholds the world. Because in other words, then it means he's a good dayan. He knows what he's doing, as opposed to when he doesn't know. But if he's like a koyin who wanders around from one granary to another, meaning he's constantly, so he's like ish truma, it's like a koyin collecting truma, he's constantly having to go from one place to another, so he's constantly having to contact senior rabbonim, the other rabbonim, to ask whether he's judging correctly, yehosena, then he wounds the earth, because then not always is he going to be able to ask. Sometimes also you ask the question a little slightly differently and you end up with a wrong psak and so forth. So in other words, the dying person has to know the relevant dinim in Shulchan Aruch and the relevant posting. Well, not so much judge shopping. It's not so much. It's more like he has to ask because he doesn't know the dinim himself, and therefore he's constantly having to ask. As a parenthetical note over here, inserted in Rashi, bringing from Tosfos, that another point of it in Ksubas, the Gemara also brings this point, and this is Zerusha, and the explanation is over there differently. That what it means is, it means a dayan who's like a king in the sense he's financially independent. He doesn't, a king is rich. He doesn't need other people to give him contributions. So then good. But if he's like a koyin who needs who's accepting shoychad and who's going around from one to collecting shoychad, like the way a koyin goes and around to the granaries to collect truma, then yehoseno, then he ruins the earth. So it's really both, Tosfos points out, else in Ksubas, that in fact it really is both. We are comparing him to a king in both senses. It does mean as far as chokhmah, but it also does mean as far as that he's financially independent. Now, Marsha points out that we find in a number of places that a Talmud Chacham is called a king, and we even find specifically Chachamim who are expert in Dinei Mamonos are compared in various places in Shas to kings. We see it, Marsha points out, we see in Rosh Hashanah davening, we associate, when we talk about Hashem's judgment, we specifically refer to Hashem as a melech in that regard, a melech hamishpat. So Marshall goes on and points out, you know, it's nothing wrong sometimes. A Rav may not know what the halacha is and he needs to consult with a senior Rav. There's no problem with that. That would be, that. The Gemara is using the expression, the Pasuk uses the expression, trum mois in the plural. In the sense, if once in a while he needs, so to speak, truma, he needs to consult with a senior Rav, okay, that's normal. But if every time, if over and over, he's having to consult with other Rabbanim, then that's a problem. It means, in other words, that so he's going to ruin judgment, because again, it means that he's not always going to ask the right questions and find out the correct facts. Okay. The Gemara goes on, Divei Nesia, the household of the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, Oikme Dayana Deloi Habagomer. One time they appointed a Dayan who didn't know the halachas properly. Now you're not allowed to do that. There's a specific issue in the Torah that to not appoint a judge who's unqualified. Rashi mentions on the Pesukim. You might think, you know, that the Rambam also brings it in Hilchos Sanhedrin. You might think, well, the guy has great midas and he has this mila and that mila and the other mila, but if he doesn't know the halachas, then you still have no business appointing him. So here the family of the household of the Nasi had appointed this guy. So then they told Yehuda ben Achmeni, who was Rish Lakish's Meturgamon, as we know all over Shas, usually a Rav or a Rosh Hashiva, when he's giving a drosha, he would say something quietly to his Meturgamon, and the Meturgamon would announce it more loudly and publicly and explain it to the people and so forth. So Yehuda ben Achmeni he had that regular job doing that for Rish Lakish. So they told Yehuda ben Achmeni, Kum Aleba Amura, come stand up and serve as his amrita. Same thing. He's going to be giving a drosha, this newly appointed dayan. So you'll do the same job for him that you usually do for the shlokish. Come gochin alei. So Yehuda bar Nachmeni got up in front of this newly appointed dayan and was leaning over him to hear what he had to say. And the guy's not saying anything. He doesn't know enough Torah to be able to actually be giving a public drosha. Posach va'omar, so Yehuda bar Nachmeni himself started saying a drosha based on the following psukim in Chavakuk. Hoi, woe, oimnim la'etz hakitza. Woe to those who say to the wood, wake up. In Pasha Traps, talking about the Oyvid Avod Azara, they go over to the wooden idol, wake up. And of course it can't, it's just wood. So woe to such people that are so foolish. Uri, or people say also, wake up, arouse yourself, la'evan dumam, to a mute stone. And the pasuk continues, Hu Yoda, can he teach? It's just surrounded with and beautified with gold and silver. And there's no spirit in it. So Pashup Shat, the Navi, is criticizing the Ovid Avod Zarah. How could they be so stupid as to be davening to their getchkes and asking them to wake up and help them? Don't they realize that they're just worthless pieces of wood or stone, no matter how much they may be beautified with gold and silver? Here, Yehuda Manachmeni is using this to refer to this dayan, who was like a mute piece of wood or stone. He had no business being appointed, and the whole reason he was appointed was because of silver or gold, because of bribes, or because the guy himself is rich, or he offered bribes to the Nasi, or they figured that he has such advantages or whatever. And he continues, and Yehuda bar Nachmeni continues, it's Rasha, you should know, Hashem in the future is going to punish those who set up such unqualified dayanim. Shenemar, as the pasuk continues, Hashem is in his holy palace, cast me pon of kol ha'aretz, be silent before him all the earth. Meaning there's going to be a silence, we're talking about the silence of destruction and devastation, is going to be the result of such people having set up such unqualified dayanim that are no better than mute idols. Marsha points out another angle on Vashem Behechel Kodshei, means like this we learned about before, that the Shechina comes when there are proper dayanim sitting in a din Torah. We learned in this past week's Pirkei Avos also, but here, since there are unqualified dayanim like this guy, then Hashem instead is going to remain in Hechel Kodshei, his Shechina is going to stay up there and not come down here to earth where it belongs. Goyish judges is a whole other matter. The Gemara kind of often assumes that Goyish judges is almost a given, that they're going to be accepting Shoychad and corrupt and whatever. That's, you know, it's not like we have much control over them. Yeah, when Yad Yisrael Takifa, when Jews are in power, they have a responsibility. You know, that Amma mentions it in Hilchos Malachim, that yeah, they have a responsibility to see to it that the Goyim have proper judges, whether Jewish judges or Goyish judges, that Amma says they can take their pick as long as they're properly qualified. But yeah, most of the time throughout all the centuries of Golos, we haven't had exactly the ability to affect that very much.
Judge. Maybe what? This is a fact, but
this is a Jewish judge we're talking about. This is
a Goyish judge, no justification.
Well, to go to a Goyish judge, for Jews to go to a Goyish judge is also true. There's no justification for that, unless they can't get it arranged.
The judge himself.
Yeah.
The judge himself. No justification.
Yeah. Marshub. The point of the Maturgamon was, in other words, that it could be a different language. It could be, for example, sometimes the Rosh Hashiva would be talking in Lashon Kodesh and the Maturgamon would be literally translating it into Aramaic. It may also be sometimes the Rosh Hashiva, instead of bothering him, instead of that he has to have the trouble of explaining it in plain language to everybody, he can say, he's on a much higher level after all, so he can say something briefly and expect that his Maturgamon will be able to explain it more clearly and teach it out for the people. Marsha brings in this connection from a Yerushalmi in Masechta Bikurim that mentions a very similar story where they appointed an unqualified dayan, and again, there was one of the Chachamim got up and gave almost the identical drosha, but he explained, he ended the drosha with a different tzedek. He says, when the pasuk says, V'ashem v'heichal kodshoi, he says, you should know, that refers to Rabbi Yitzchak ben Rabbi Lazar in the shul at the entrance of Kesri. You know, there you have an example of a part of Pasha Tzamet Chacham is being called Bashem Behechal Kodshay. We know there are a number of places. We have, you know, the Pshim and Yechori is called Pnei Man Pnei Ha'odim Dor Rashbi. We have a variety of different places in Torah literature where the Chachamim are, so to speak, called by Hashem's name. So this is an example of it. In other words, the point is, whichever Chacham it was that gave the Drasha over there was explaining, instead of appointing these unqualified dayanim who are like mute wood of stone, instead you really want a dayan, you'll go find Rav Yitzchak Rav Elazar in the shul at the entrance to Kesedin. He's the kind of dayan you should be appointing, not these no goodniks. And Marshall also points out, you know, that the Hasmi Panav Kol Aretz fits very nicely also Midah Keneged Midah. They're appointing Dayanim who are mute, who can't speak and can't say what the thing in Torah, like this guy that Yehuda Vanachmeni was in front of. So the result is that there's going to be a silence of devastation in the land as a result of that.
Hasmi
Panav Kol Aretz, yeah, okay, but that's not what the politics says, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Amar Reish Lakish, Kalamamid Dayan Al HaTzibur She'enen Hogun, when a person appoints an unqualified Dayan over the people, Kilu Netea Asheira. It's as if he's planting an Yisrael. It's as if he's planting an Asherah tree among the Jewish people. Shenema, the pasuk says, you should set up for yourself judges and law enforcement officials in all your gates, meaning in all your cities. The Samech Lay, and right after that, the pasuk says, don't plant yourself an Asherah, any kind of tree near the Mizbeach. So we see that next to the Mizbeach is going to be the next thing. Amar Rav Ashi of Makom Sheyesh Tamid Chacham, when there is an actual qualified Tamid Chacham in the area where they should have appointed him instead, like in the Yerushalmi, where they should have appointed Rabbi Yitzchak Rav Elazar, and instead, so Mela, in other words, is that enough when the guy is unqualified, or at least they could say, listen, you know, this is the least worst option, we didn't have anybody else. But when they have an actual Tamid Chacham that they could have appointed instead, and then they appoint this guy because of whatever other qualities he has, Kilu Nota Etzim Mizbeach, then it's even worse to planting an Asherah next to the Mizbeach. Because Rashi points out, a real Talmud Chacham is Mechaper and protects the Jewish people like the Mizbeach. And here instead, you're planting an Asherah. There, Shenema, as the pasuk continues, Eitzel Mizbeach Hashem Alekecha, next to the Mizbeach of Hashem. So that's even worse. Why is an unqualified Dayan compared to an Asherah? There's a lot of different explanations. Marshall points out, first of all, so we have, we were learning before that a proper Dayan is called Elikim, which means the powerful one, but it also means, in other words, he has a certain power of Hashem, in him. In fact, for example, Elikim Lesakal, we talked about the other day, has a double meaning. Elikim Lesakal means don't curse a Dayan, and also is also an issue not to curse Hashem. So therefore, so again, when a Dayan judges correctly and properly, then he becomes a partner to Hashem. So now, when a person is, what happens when a person is planting an Asherah, and especially next to the Mizbeach, in effect, he's saying, I believe in another God, L'chas V'shalom, together with Hashem. So the same way, this guy who appoint unqualified Dayanim is basically saying that he has those Elikim, the real qualified Dayanim, and together with them, there can also be these no goodniks. So there's that. There's a lot of other reasons that are given as well. An Asherah on the face of it looks like a very nice thing to do. Why not beautify the Beis Mikdash with trees? And yet the Torah says you're not allowed to. The same way, the person appoints this guy, and he thinks, well, the guy has all these advantages. He's a great Baal Midas. He's a great public speaker. He's this, he's that, he's the other. But the fact is, that's not what the Torah wants from you, and therefore it's like putting up an Asherah. They talk about also, you know, you plant a tree, it takes years for it to grow and become something big. In the same way, for example, your point, an unqualified Dayan, it may sometimes take a long time before you realize what the consequences of it are. A lot of different explanations of what exactly the comparison is to an Asherah. So in this connection, the Gemara continues, Ksiv, Loi Sasun Iti, Hashem says, right after Matan Torah, at the end of Parashas Yisro, don't make with me Eloikei Chesef Eloikei Zahar, gods of silver or gods of gold. So what does that mean? Eloikei Chesef Eloikei Zahar, who do I abdi? What does that mean? You're not allowed to make yetchkas of silver or gold, hod de eitz ve'evan shari? What, are you allowed to make them out of wood or stone? Of course not. So why is the pasuk specifically mentioning silver or gold? Okay, in Pshat, you have Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, for example, that it means that it's telling you don't make the Kruvim out of silver and don't make more than two of them, etc. But still, so Amar Abashi, it also means Elikah HaBobish Vil Kesef, Velikah HaBobish Vil Zav, when you have an Elikim, again a Dayan, who was appointed because of money that he gave, because of silver or gold that he gave, So you're not allowed to make such a thing. You're not allowed to appoint such a guy. And so again, with this idea that you're not allowed to appoint him because of money. There was some discussion. So of course, the Marshall points out, first of all, you really have two problems. Number one, they're paying the king or they're paying the local pirates or whatever, and they're being appointed because of that. And also the Dayan himself, the Drov himself, wants the job so that he can collect fees and things like that. So not only he's paying money for it, he treats it as almost like an investment. I'll pay X amount to be appointed, and then over the years as Drov, I'll be able to collect various fees and make money from that. So therefore, so that's the double problem. Now there was some discussion among Poskim. What if, I mean, sometimes you have, Poshid, you know, the Rav is in fact qualified. You know, here all this time we're talking about where he's not qualified, like the guy with Yehuda Ben Achmeni over there who he didn't even know how to say something of Torah in public. Sometimes you may have somebody is taka qualified, he's taka a Talmid Chacham, but also he's going to pay money to see to it that he gets the job. So there are Poskim discuss that. Maybe there's more leeway for that, since you're not only appointing him because of the silver or the gold, it's also because he deserves the appointment. There's a bit of discussion about that. Marsha goes in and then talks about it and at some length over here and talks about how wrong it is. He says in his times in Poland, you're talking the late 1500s, early 1600s, he says there was beginning to develop a problem that people were doing that. People were pushing, buying their way into Rabbanus in different cities. And it was a tremendous problem. Rabbanim of the generation or two before Marsha were yelling about it and then trying to stop it. We find the Maharal talking about it in some places in his Sforim. We find the Maharal. We find various Rabbanim of that period who were very, very bothered by it and trying to put a stop to it. Not always were they successful. So, in fact, interestingly, the Alter Rebbe, the two times that he was arrested, both times they asked him a whole bunch of questions, and there was one of the times, I don't remember if it was the first or the second, part of the question was, you have your movement of Hasidus. What exactly is it meant to accomplish? What's this newfangled thing that you're bringing in Judaism? Because the Russians took the view, you know, it's one thing, fine, Judaism, we may not like the Jews, but listen, you know, it's an old established religion. There's a limit how much we can go fight against it. But you're going to start something that they claimed was something new, then no, we're going to tamp that. We're going to fight that down. So Alter Rebbe explains to them, he says that up until it used to be in the last couple of hundred years, as Marsha is describing over here, that many Rabbonim would buy their way into the position. Now, Alter Rebbe explains, these Rabbonim, some of them were qualified, some of them less so. Whatever the case, many of them were great Talmid Chachamim, but they wanted to show off their knowledge of Torah. So when there were people in their town who were into Avodah Satfila, then the Rabbanim and these Rabbanim would suppress them. We don't want people showing us up that they're Ovdei Hashem and we're not. We want to be able to show off our knowledge of Torah. So you're going to be davening Ba'arichos and you're going to be davening Ba'avodah or whatever, then we don't want any part of you in town. And Alter Rebbe says this has been going on for a long time, so that people who wanted to daven b'avodah have to kind of do it underground because otherwise the Rabbanim won't tolerate it. Then the Alter Rebbe says now the Polish kingdom has been dismembered. The Poland was cut up among the neighboring countries. Parts of it went to Russia, and now he says that you Russian government, you don't do that kind of thing. You don't allow Rabbanim to buy their way into the position. Therefore, now Hasidus is able to come out and flourish where it had to be underground all these couple of hundred years before.
The Kohen Gadol also
bought their way. Also bought their way into the position. Marshall talks about it at some length over here, and talks about, you see, that genuine Talmid Chachamim never wanted high positions. We find many examples throughout Shas where they were offered high positions and they declined it. And he brings also from that Yerushalmi in Bikurim that the Ramona would look down and make fun of people of Dayonim or Rabbonim who were appointed because of money. Again, as the Gemara says, he would call them Alekei Chesed, Alekei Zahav, and they even he has the expression the talus that they wear, the Talmud Chacham style talus that they would wear is nothing better than Mardas Shochamur. It's like a donkey's saddle. The Rambam brings this La Halacha in Hilchos Talmud Torah or in Hilchos Sanhedrin, I don't remember. The comparison, by the way, Maharshal says, is because what do you have? This guy who needs to wear the talus shel Talmid Chacham so that people should honor him, so he's going to wear it all the time because he figures if he's not wearing it, nobody is going to know who he is and they're not going to respect him. So therefore, he's very similar to a donkey, which is constantly wearing its saddle, as the Gemara elsewhere says, a donkey is cold even in the heat of the summer, and therefore you'll constantly have a saddle on it to help keep it warm. And the same way, this guy is constantly wearing his talus so that people should recognize him as the Talmid Chacham that he claims to be. Okay. The Gemara continues. Rav Tiyaba Osil Bei Dina. When Rav would come to his Beis Din Shtibel for a Din Torah, Omar Hochi, he would say the following statement. It's kind of like half tefillah, half complaint, half saying what he's striving towards. So he says he would say Berus Nachshoy L'Ketolam Nafik with my own free will, I'm going out to be killed. So Rashi says, he means, in other words, if I judge wrongly, as we've been saying all along, then I have a heavy responsibility the Eidishter puts on me, and therefore, like, I'm going willingly to my possible death if I end up judging wrongly. There's, by the way, something very similar that man mentions in the Psukim when Shlomo took over as king after David HaMelech. He asks Hashem, he says, I'm all of 12 years old, and I need tremendous help, min Hashemayim, for that reason. Because he says, you know, speaking of Goyish judges, we were just saying, Shlomo says to the Eidishter, and actually brings it on the Pasuk. A Goyish judge, he misjudges somebody, Mela, okay, you know, that's just how it is. But a Yiddish judge, if he misjudges wrongly, like we said before, he's putting it on Hashem to make things right, and he's taking away the shit, and so on and so forth. It's a tremendous heavy responsibility, and I could even lose my life for it, and that's what Rav is saying over here. And therefore, he asks Hashem, please give me chokhmah to be able to judge the people properly. So now, Rav is saying the same kind of thing. I'm going willingly to my potential death. Utsvi beisei leisu ovid, and he continues, he's speaking in third person, he means about himself. He's not doing what his household needs. So in other words, I'm going to the Beis Din Shtibel to judge Dine Mamanis. There's no Dine Nefashis in Bavel, but Dine Mamanis at least. But I'm not even accomplishing something useful for my family over here. And I come back home empty-handed because I'm not making any money from my dayanis. You know, I'll have to charge for Dine Torah. Halavai should take Bia Kiyatsia, halavai that when I come home, that I should be no worse off than when I left. Meaning, in other words, he's saying, when I left my house, I didn't have any Averis, because I hadn't judged wrongly. The Eidishter should help that when I come back home, I should also be equally as free of Averis, that I haven't judged wrongly and gotten myself a serious Aveda for that. This is according to Rashi. Maharshal points out, then, there's a couple of things that he's saying that seem repetitious, and why is he so worried? I mean, we did say before, fine, a dayan has an enormous responsibility, but we also said, ein l'dayan elamasha ein avroyas. At the end of the day, the dayan has to put in his best effort, and the Eibishter will help him to come to the right conclusion. So what is he so worried about? Ketola, that he's risking his life, etc. So no, Maharshal says what it means is that he means like this. What happens, we talked about a few days ago, you could have a case where a dayan rules against somebody rich or powerful or whatever, and the guy starts being roid of him. The guy Poshet starts threatening him financially or bodily or whatever. So Rav is concerned about that. I'm going to go judge Dinei Torah, and sometimes the Baal Din are going to be a Baal Din kosher, and I might get in deep trouble with them. So I'm going to Lektola, I'm going to potentially to my death if this Baal Din kosher decides to start up with me. And I go home empty-handed, in the sense that, that, again, like, similar to what Rashi says, because I can't charge for my services of judging a din torah. The most that I can get is schar batola demuchach, that I could have had a different job that I was doing at the same time, so I'm entitled to collect a fee for that. But still, on the other hand, he continues, halavai shetei bia kiyitzia, halavai though, that at least when I come home, I shouldn't have lost more than when I left. Meaning, in other words, as it is, I'm not earning any profit from my dayonis. But it could even happen. I make a mistake in a din torah, and sometimes the din will be, as it was discussed briefly earlier in the perek, discussed in more detail later in the masechta, there are certain cases where the dayan has to pay out of pocket for his mistake in a din torah. So then he's saying, so halavai, I don't end up that. It's bad enough I'm not making any money from this, but halavai, at least I shouldn't end up losing out more by judging wrongly and then having to pay out of pocket the guy that I wronged. It is true, Maharshal points out, the Gemara does mention that a mumcha l'rabim, somebody who has smicha, which Rav did, in fact did, and who's accepted by the rabim as their local rov and dayan, is in fact not responsible to pay out of pocket, but Rav didn't want to consider himself as a mumcha. If there was going to be a case where he actually paskin wrongly and would be, and if he wasn't a mumcha, would be chayav to pay, then Rav is not going to take advantage of the fact and say, well, I'm a mumcha, I don't have to pay. He would still go l'fnim mishuras hadin and pay out of pocket, so he's davening to the Eibishter that at least I shouldn't have to be in that situation that I end up judging wrongly and having to do that. Anaf Yosef brings another point over here of the triple expressions that he's using. There are a few different reasons that might cause a person to judge wrongly. You might have, if he's too hasty about it, if he comes to a too quick a conclusion, it could be if he's biased in favor of one of the Baalei Din, or it can be if he takes shoychad, and then actually have a fourth one as well. Push a person can make a mistake. A person is a boss of a dom and he can make a mistake. So now he's saying, oh, and he has to dive into the Eibishter that he shouldn't. So therefore he's saying all these things. He's saying I'm going out of my own free will to be killed. What he means by that, when he says, "Katola nafik," he doesn't mean, Anaf Yosef says, he doesn't mean that I'm risking my own life. I have to consider this din Torah, even though it's only din mamonis, I have to consider it with the gravity as if it was din nefashis, and be very, very careful and very, 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 very deliberate about and not rush to judgment. Then he continues that I have to be sure that Tzvi Beisiv, Lesu Ovid, I'm not even doing something on behalf of my household. Even if a member of my household were to come to the Din Torah, I shouldn't be biased in their favor. Then Vereitim Levesa Ozo, I'm not getting any money out of it, so I'm not taking any shoychad. And nevertheless, it still is possible always that I could make a mistake. So Halavai, Shetei Biyakiyitzi, Hashem, please grant me that I should be able to, when I come home, I should be as free of mistakes as when I left my house, that I shouldn't make a mistake from any of these possibilities. So in that case, then basically it's a tefillah. The whole thing is a tefillah today, Mishnah, about that I've done everything I could to avoid any sources of bias or mistake, but I still need siyata d'shmaya for it. So in this connection, the Gemara continues. Ki have a chodzi, another thing that Rav would say to himself when he's getting tremendous covered. He have a chodzi amvur de safri abasri. When he would see a crowd of Talmid Chachamim following him, he was a great Talmid Chachamim, a great Rosh Hashanah. So you'd always have, whenever he's going anywhere, you'd have a crowd of people following him. Omar, he would say to himself the pasuk, two psukim from Iyov, im yalal shemayim siyo. Even if his reputation and his greatness goes all the way up to shemayim. And the pasuk continues, "V'roshe la'ov yagiyeh," even if his head reaches the clouds. The next pasuk continues, "Kigelolo lenetzach yoved," he will be lost, he'll be gone like a piece of dung, gone forever. And the pasuk continues, "Royav yomer ayoy," those who saw him will say, "Well, where is he now?" In other words, he's saying, "Pasha to himself, self sukin." No matter how great a person is, he should always realize it's only a very temporary thing, and the next day, the guy's gone, and everybody forgets about him. So that way, it helped keep him. He would say that to himself to keep in perspective that he shouldn't get gaiva dick from this tremendous honor that they're giving him. Maharshal points out that, you know, you have specifically when we talk about reaching all the way up to the heavens, that suggests like Odomarishin. We know when he was created, it was Ma'orat Abarakiyah. And nevertheless, though, what happened is that he ended up going wrong with the Chatei Tzadas, and the same way, he ended up becoming mortal, and we see whether the greatest kind of Tumah, the most severe kind of Tumah that a person has to stay away from is Tumas Nes. So therefore, that's the comparison. In other words, even a person was as great as Odomarish, and the next day, he can be a nothing. And the same way Rav would say this to himself to help keep things in perspective for himself. So this is the idea, you know, Al-Derech, like you have, the Al-Derech points out in a number of places in Tanya that sometimes a person has to push it to speak to his Yetzer Hara, sometimes even yell at his Yetzer Hara to tell it who's boss and to keep things straight in his mind. So this is kind of what Rav is doing over here as well. Similarly, Marzutra Chasida, another one of the Amoraim, Marzutra Chasida, ki avu mechati le b'shabsa derikla. When people were carrying him on their shoulders during the Shabbos of the Yom Tov. So the Shabbos of the Yom Tov specifically means, Rashi explains, it means not during the Yom Tov itself, it means during the 30 days before major Yom Tov, where, as we learned right before Pesach, that's the time when Sherlin in Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, that's the time when Sherlin Bedoshin, when people are asking questions and the Rav is darshining in the halachas of the upcoming Yom Tov. So they called that Shabbos of the Rigla. Now, Mazutra was old. So therefore, so the problem is he couldn't easily get into this medrash first because he couldn't walk fast enough to get there first. So what would happen? He'd end up coming after everybody else. Then everybody has to be matriach to stand in his presence. So instead, what they would do is, so he'd have his servants carry him on their shoulders so that they could bring him there ahead of everybody else, and that way he's not matriach everybody to stand in his honor. So now, so it's also a tremendous honor that he's being given by the whole crowd over there. Omar Hochi. So he would also say a pasuk to himself to help remind himself to remain honored. Ki loyla olam choisen, the strength of the covet of a person is not forever. The im nezer l'dor v'dor, is there a crown from generation to generation? No. In other words, I'm here today and gone tomorrow. So that should help keep things. That should help remind him to not become a baal geiger. Marshall points out the word choisen, actually the word choisen basically means strength. So yes, there can be, we don't have to say that the end of the pasuk v'im nezer l'dor v'dor is not necessarily a rhetorical question. Sometimes there is a nezer l'dor v'dor. Kingship, for example, goes from generation to generation. But nevertheless, the choisen, the strength of the body, is not going to last forever, because eventually, no matter how strong a person's body is, eventually it breaks down and the person passes away. So this way also it would remind him to realize to remain an honor with all this tremendous cover that he's being given. Okay. The Gemara continues, Dorash Bakapara, Minoham Milsa de Omer Abanan. Where's a source in Torah for this that the Chachamim say heaven was sooner in Badin? At the beginning of Pirkei Avos, one of the things that the word Shloisha Dvarim, not the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, said, heaven was sooner in Badin, be deliberate in judgment. In other words, don't rush to judge the case. So where's a source in Chumash for that? So the pasuk says, well, we mentioned before about the term of Chachamim being compared to the Mizbeach. So here we have a similar comparison. The pasuk says, well, salab malos, don't go up to the Mizbeach with steps. So you have to use a ramp. The samachleb, the elam ashpatim. And then the next thing is the elam ashpatim. The point is, when there are steps, you can run up them. But when there's a ramp, because it's sloped and a little bit slippery, you have to walk more deliberately. And it was Taka designed that way. The point was, as the pasuk says, Asher l'sigola v'oscha'olav, you don't want the Kohenim to be taking wide steps and their nakedness is being shown. Okay, Rashi points out they're wearing a chasayim, but still, it's kodur l'gili erva, as Rashi says. So instead, they had a ramp, and therefore that forced them to walk slowly, okif v'tzad gudol, heel to toe. So therefore, we see from that smichus that the Torah is telling us, treat a din Torah the same way. Ve'elam ha'shpatim, treat it the same way. Be slow and deliberate rather than rushing to judgment. In fact, Beni Oyoda points out that actually the Asher le'sigola of Oschalov fits very nicely with that also. If you do rush into judgment and you're found to make a mistake, there's going to be a big gilui erva, there's going to be a big embarrassment to the Dayan that he rushed to things and didn't think it through properly. Marshall points out another meaning of loisalab malois is it can also mean malois as in his own mila. He might think to himself, look what a great mila I have, look what a great Talmid Chacham I am. I don't need to think through the things so carefully. But he shouldn't. Loisalab malois, don't ascend on your own milas, rather realize that you need to look it over again and again. And in fact, the halacha is, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that even a Dayan has had the same case come to him before, he still can't rush to say, oh, well, I did the same case last week, so it must be the same thing. Now he has to consider the merits of this one very carefully as well. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Elazar, so here's another drasha that we learn from the Smichus of Pesukim, Minayin l'dayan shelo yafsia al roshei am kodesh. How do we know that the Dayan should not step over the heads of the holy people? So, like we were just talking about, like coming into the Beis Medrash or the Beis Din Shkibble or whatever, in the middle of things. So Rashi explains, when there was the Rosh Hashivah, was giving his drosha, and the Meturgamon would be translating for the people, everybody would be sitting on the ground. Now, if somebody at that point comes in after late, then he's having to literally step over people's heads. Think of like, anybody who was in 770 in the old days by Fabrangians can immediately understand what we're talking about over here. So therefore, you're not supposed to do that. In fact, the Gemara does mention elsewhere there are certain exceptions to that. You have somebody who, the Tzibur Tzrichim Loi, where the Tzibur needs him, he does have a certain license to do that, but in general, a Dayan should not take advantage of that. So you should make sure, in other words, to come in before everybody else rather than after everybody came. So how do we know? Same thing. Shenem of Salam Amalus, don't go up on steps. The Samachle, Ve'elam Ashpatim, and then Ve'elam Ashpatim, so we see, in other words, the Shoftim, the judges are also being warned to not do that, to not step over people, but rather come there early enough so that they can get to their place without having to do that. Speaking of that posik, the Elam Shvatim, the posik continues, Asher Tosim. The posik says, the Elam Shvatim, Asher Tosim with Nathan. So what's Asher Tosim? Asher Tumandim, in Boile, I should say that you should teach them. So okay, Rashi mentions on a posik, it means that you should put it in for them to Shulchan Aruch, like a set table, and then make sure that they know all the halachas thoroughly. But still, the word Sima usually suggests something that you actually, something tangible and physical that you put in front of them. So what is that? This refers to the kalim of the dayanim, actual certain objects that the dayanim have to have in the basin shtibble, that you have to make sure to actually have them available, toss them, literally have them physically available and visible to the bali din. What do we mean? Ki hold it of hunek, you have enough of the dinner. When Rav Huna would go out to judge a din Torah, when he was going to his base in Shtibel, Omar Hochi, he would tell his Meshorosim or whatever, Apikuli Mone Chanusoi, bring out the tools of my shop, of the tools of my trade. My Ninhu, what are they? The first one is Chutri, or Makel, a stick. Sometimes you have people who don't want to listen to the base din, and you need to beat them with a stick. The sandoli, and a sandal, which is going to be used for chalitza. Today's Shlosha Perakim of Rambam talked all about the details of chalitza. So chalitza is going to be done in Beis Din, so they have to have a chalitza shoe on hand. Bifrat, actually, by the way, I mean, you look in the poskim, you find that it's actually quite complicated. The details of how that shoe is to be made are actually quite complicated. They're nothing at all like the shoes that we wear nowadays. So you actually, so a Beis Din really does have to have on hand a special shoe, the special type of shoe that with which you can do chalitza. Shipuri, they need a shofar in case they need to put somebody in chayrim, or a tsui, and a strap also to give people malchus when they need it. So these are, Rav Huna is saying, these are like my shopkeeper's tools, so to speak. These are the tools of my Beis Din, and I have to make sure that they're available to me. So that's what it means. I should toss in the name. You have to actually put these things in front of them. So the Gemara continues in this connection. The pasuk says Moshe is describing in Parshas Devarim, telling over the story of how he had appointed Dayanim, and he says, "Vatsaves shechtechan va'esahi." I commanded your judges at that time. So what's this word Vatsava? Whenever we have the word Sav, like Rashi says at the beginning of Parshas Sav, means zeros in Sav. The Lashon zeros miyad l'doros. It means like you have to tell them to be careful and to do this for now and for future generations. So what does this mean? It means you have to be zoris in the use of the in the use of the stick and of the ritzua. Use them, but use them only when you need to make the people fearful l'shem shamayim. In other words, don't just think you have these tools available, therefore you can just lord it over them whenever you want. No, Vatsava, he tells them, I'm commanding you to be careful, to be zoris, to use it only when necessary, l'shem shamayim. Malshah points out, we do find Moshe himself, a few psukim earlier, points out that people were very argumentative and quarrelsome. So therefore, there was real need to tell the Dayanim, you have to show them who's boss, but make sure that you do it only in the Shem Shemayim. The Gemara continues there. So the pasuk says, yeah, Moshe continues with his instructions to them. Shamoya ben achechem ushvatem tzedek. Listen to what's going on between your brothers, between your fellow Jews. And you should judge righteously. So what does that mean? Shamoya ben achechem, omen abchanina, azhor ledayan, ule beisdin, shalo yishma divrei baldin, kerdim shiyoved baldin chaveri. This is a warning to the dayan, or to the beisdin, that they can't listen to what one of the baldinim says before the other one shows up. It has to be ben achechem only when it's between the two of them. Because, in other words, Rashi says, look, when you only have one Baal Din over there, he's going to say his claims. He may make outright false claims, and there's nobody there to contradict him. So now the Dayan has already heard that, and therefore it gets into his head that this is the way it is, and now it's going to be much harder for the other Baal Din, when he comes later with his counter-arguments, to undo that. The first, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, as they say, and here, when you have one Baal Din by himself, he's able to make that first impression, and therefore the Torah is warning, don't do that. They talk about, in particular, you also have, it's not just the fact of a first impression, you also have, once a person has convinced themselves in their mind that a certain thing is a certain way, it's very hard, then it becomes part of their self-image, part of their self-respect. It must be this way, and therefore, so for that reason alone, it's also very hard for the other Baal Din later on to undo that, and therefore the Torah is warning to begin with, don't put yourself in that situation. Vazhar la Baal Din, and it's also a warning for the Baal Din himself, for the Yakin, Dvar of the Dayan, Kain Shiva Baal Din Chaveri, that he's not allowed to try that kind of thing either, to start explaining his case to the Dayan before the other one shows up. Because we can read the word, not just shamoya, that you should listen, but shamoya, make it heard only when it's ben achechem, only when both of you are present. Rav Kahana omamehacham, mi lois sisa, lois sasi. Rav Kahana says, you have another source in Torah for it, where it says, lois sisa, shem ashtav. Don't bear a false report, which includes not to say lashon hara, and includes a variety of different things. It means don't cause it to be said. So you, the Baal Din, are not allowed to cause a shem ashtav, a false report to be said, namely to be giving your argument before the other Baal Din shows up. And then again, your way of saying it, whether you said it honestly or less honestly or whatever, gets very much into the Dayan's head, and then it's very hard to get it out of there. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ula. Lately, the Rebbe was talking about in Nun Aleph, we see that the Umas HaOlam themselves are doing actions of Tov V'Chesed. Actually, we see that nowadays also, for example, with them fighting against Iran, for example, they wish they should help, but that comes to a successful conclusion soon. So then they show, with that, they demonstrate that Yesh Baal HaBayis Tubir Azu, that the Eivishter runs the world, and this is a preparation for V'Hoysa L'Hashem HaMelucha by the Gula Hasidya. So at the time, the Rebbe was saying the Sikha in Nun Aleph, we saw it actually at that time, where the Umas HaOlam were preparing the way for the Gola by doing Tzedakah and Chinuch, which are all of those presuppose the idea that there's an Eivishter who runs the world. Continuing the Halachas of Tzitzis, we were talking about how the tzitzis are placed on the corners and everything. By the way, we had something we learned about last time, the idea that some people make knots at the end of the strings, but others don't because they don't want to have any more than the statutory number of knots, the 5 knots on each corner. Baruch Willem was mentioning to me something in connection with the Rebbe's talasim. When the Rebbe would get a talus that didn't yet have tzitzis on it, then he would tell them first to cut off all of those tassels, all those decorative tassels you have on the corners, on the sides, so that in fact when they put on the tzitzis you only have the actual number of knots. When they gave him one that already had the tzitzis on them, then he didn't bother with that. So an interesting idea with that. Okay, as far as the holes, so yesh omrim that you should make 2 holes and you put the tzitzis strings in one hole and out the other. Now, the Alter Rebbe says the halacha is not like those yesh omrim. Those who want to be machmer on themselves, which is, of course, minhag chabad, should only do that by the talus cotton, so it's not mechzi kiyura. You don't want to look like you're showing off, like I'm so extra careful in the mitzvah. So a talus cotton, the corners of it are tucked inside your clothes, then you can do that, and that's taka how we do it. By a talus gadol, though, we taka only do one hole, and then again, the other little hole that you have by the side, as we talked about the other day, is just as a practical matter to make sure that the tzitzis remain notif ala konef. So that's what we do. We do have 2 holes, and we in fact have it, and the 2 holes are made on a diagonal. Yeah.